I've always said it's not what you make, it's what you keep.
When you look at the coaches that won championships at the U, there was a certain type of player that they were bringing in.
They basically just overlooked it. Chip Kelly's overlooked it.
It's the future!
Down and Distance. It's on WGNplus.com.
What's going on? Welcome everybody to this week's edition of Down the Distance. Two Dads Talking Sports exclusively on WGNplus.com. I'm Jared Payton alongside my man Sean M. Davis 1 on Twitter. The Picasso on the board. This is four downs, four questions. We tackle them how we tackle them. So let's go.
First down.
You know, first out the gate. In 2015, NFL draft is over. Chicago was the landscape, the backdrop. Unbelievable time, but a lot of people are talking about just now, how did the Bears grade out, you know, in certain people's opinions. I want to tell you my grade, but I'm going to ask you first, Sean Davis. How do you think the Bears fared in their NFL draft?
Not a lot of flash. Maybe you got a little flash with the number 7 overall pick, Kevin White, but substance is definitely there. I think they solved a lot of things, and the most impressive thing was they had a plan. If you don't have a plan, then you plan to fail.
So what are
That's
you saying?
One of the biggest differences from Ryan Pace and Phil Emery that I saw in his first draft.
So you're saying Phil Emery didn't have a plan?
Shea McClellan is not a plan.
What do you mean?
There's no way you had a plan for Shea McClellan.
I mean, that
if you had a plan for Shea McClellan, you would have switched to the 3-4 defense immediately. I give the Bears a B+. Plain and simple. I won't go to an A. There's room for that to be raised up if they do extra credit during the season. And these players all make right. more of an impact. Absolutely. They can get to an A. But a B+.
All right, first off, ladies and gentlemen, I was just joking about Shea McClellan. Now, if you've ever, you know, listened to Jared, Harry, and Spike or any time I've been on.
They need call him Shea Butter.
I've been very critical of seeing what Phil Emery did when he went and chose Shea McClellan, because he wasn't even a first-round grade. I don't know what he was thinking about. You talking about a reach? That was a reach. And if I had to look at this Bears draft, that's one thing that I didn't see. I didn't see any reaches. You talked about just being able to get good substance. And when you talk about good value, I think you got good value at every single pick. And I think when you talk about best available, when you were picking, the Bears did a phenomenal job on picking guys that they thought were going to be great for their system. So talking about a grade, I'd have to give him a B. I think I can give him a B+ or an A, but I think a lot of people would be like, oh, you're a homer. And you're just giving. No, I just think it was a solid draft. There was any time that I was sitting and watching the draft, there was not one time that I was going, dude, what is he thinking? I was going, okay, I actually see your vision. I see where you're going with this pick. So go back to the Shea McClellan pick. I didn't see that vision with Phil Emery. I was going, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, where are you going? You're reaching way too far for this one. With all these picks, even with Kevin White, you can go back and listen to the podcast we did last week. I basically said, I like him. It's not that I'm hesitant that I don't like him. I think people are giving him a bad rap for the system that he played in. Listen, I put a little bit of stock into it, but I'm not putting a whole bunch into it, Sean. I can't. I'll tell you this. You go online and you go to his game against Alabama, he balled out. He balled out against Alabama. So listen, we're talking about one of the nicest catches, the touchdown catch that he made. The dude balled out. So you can't tell me he had guys draped all over him because of his system at West Virginia. I just don't know how he'll acclimate. Do you not see where
he's
offenses are going?
He's fast.
He's beast, he's fast. But let's look at where the transition of where offenses are going. It's what he's doing. So now I pretty much feel the exact same way. I'm probably around an 8, maybe even a 9, because now when you pair him with Alshon Jeffrey, this is exactly what you were missing. You get rid of Brandon Marshall. You need to find somebody else to put numbers up on the offense, and you go to get a guy that is a true alpha male, a dog in my sense.
Yeah, we'll get to that. Needing a dog.
Oh, we're going to get
on
to
your
that?
Team. We're definitely going to get to that in this podcast. Mm-hmm. But talking about the plan, what's most impressive is that every pick shows you the plan. Kevin White can stretch the field. He gives you another version of Brandon Marshall that's more athletic, a little bit faster. They went out and got Eddie Royal specifically for the slot.
Yes.
Right? You still have Wilson.
That was a huge need.
You still have Wilson. We haven't seen the best of him from what we've heard.
Yeah.
So, you know, but on the defensive end, Goldman's there. You have Ego Ferguson. You sure up the inside. We still don't know about Sutton in this system because he's a little smaller. She's a tweener. But you get to move Jay Ratliff out to the outside.
Which I think is going to be a super positive for this team.
And they didn't reach for a linebacker, even though most people wanted them to draft one, which tells me Vic Fangio looked at the players he had and said, I can work with this.
Yeah, and you look at guys that you know that are going to, especially at that linebacker position, a lot of people thought that that's where maybe they should be heading, especially on the defensive side of the ball. But I think Vic knows what he has. I think he can go to bat with what he has. I think now it's like, where does a guy like Ego Ferguson fit in? You know, how does he fit in? Especially, too, some of the surrounding parts of, like, Jared Allen. Can he be successful in this defense? I think that's what intrigues me and makes me so anxious for football and actually for them to put on the pads is to see how this defense is kind of transformed now of where Vic Fangio wants to go. You got to look at what they did on the offensive side of the ball. A lot of people didn't think that they were probably going to go for another running back, but they did. Jeremy Langford. Now you look at a guy that I liked, especially in college. Is he a little bit different than looking at a guy like Matt Forte?
Once again, you can see a plan.
Yes.
This is what I love about Ryan Pace. Not only did he take Langford, but the pick before that, taking Grassu, taking another Oregon athletic offensive lineman like Cal Long, where a system where they like to get out on the perimeter, they like to pull, they like to trap. Matt Slauson, I mean, he does that just as well as anybody at left guard.
Very
so
good.
Now you have two athletic guards, another very strong and stout athletic center.
Hold on.
The running game and what it can be with John Fox.
What he wants the running game to be is when you look at a guy like what Langford brings you, this is what he's looking for.
Very similar to what Michigan State ran a lot.
Exactly.
A lot of traps. A lot of pulls.
And you talk inside, in between the tackles is where I think he can get better at breaking tackles. He's going to have to get his lower body a little bit stronger. That's what it's going to take to get in the weight room and run the hill a little bit more. If he can get break after that one tackle, after contact, and keep it moving, keep the chains moving, it's going to be unbelievable for him. But he's got to get better at pass protection, and that's the name of the game for running backs when they come into the league. They don't get up to par on pass protection, and that's what makes them have to sit on the bench.
That goes back to John Fox's days in Carolina when he had an inside runner like Steven Davis.
Yeah.
Then he would come in with a young Deshaun Foster that could go inside and
pop it out to the outside.
Langford can be that inside guy.
So
he can also pop it outside. Matt, you know him.
Basically, this is what every system Matt Forte's been in previous to the past 2 years has been. Having another running back there with him, especially down at the goal line where he didn't get those touches. But now this is going to be even when you're talking about in between the 20s where you got another running back that can come in and give you a little bit different than what Matt Forte can give you.
And Jay should have that V or that U, however you want to call it.
Yeah,
it should be much better.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
He should have that U that he can step up into and be able to make solid throws.
And I think this is going to be huge. You talked about going out and getting another center, a center that could be very effective and also a guy that was kind of a dog like we're going to talk about.
We're going to talk about the dogs.
I mean, he is one of those alpha males.
Second down.
The draft moved from New York to Chicago.
Chi-town.
But somehow a New York team ended up being the biggest winner of the draft, in my opinion. When you have the top overall player in the draft, regardless of position, drop to you.
You're talking about the Jets?
At the sixth pick.
Okay.
And you already have one of the most dominant defensive lines already?
I mean, it bolsters up just a little bit more. And then you look at some of the moves of acquiring Brandon Marshall. I mean, this is... But still, with even those moves, quarterback is still a key with the Jets. So
quarterback is something they'll get to in a year or two.
Yeah. So I mean,
they will. Don't forget the defensive backfield they put together in free agency.
Yes, I'm with you. I get it. It just offensively is still going to be the key.
They've had a pretty darn good offseason.
They have done well. I guess I would have to go with my old coach, man. Jeff Fisher, seeing what St. Louis
now,
has
you're
done.
The same guy that last week told me you don't know about
Todd Gurley
because of the knee. But you like him at the 10th pick now?
Listen, No, I just know what when you look at what Jeff Fisher likes to do and having running backs, this was a perfect fit for him. Offensive line helped too to figure that out. I just really like the fact that you get a guy that is a great running back that is a top three pick.
Yeah.
If doesn't get injured.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I still think those question marks are going to be there. But to see what I think the Rams went and did their homework. So they went and did their homework. They assessed the knee. They made sure they probably did, I don't know how many different checks on that knee. Everything kind of seems like it's been working out. And I think, yeah, I feel a little bit at ease. But when you start to see guys come back from injury that are stronger now,
yeah,
because of how the surgeries are,
yeah,
it puts me at ease a little bit. I would have to say St. Louis. And you said something to me last week about Atlanta getting better. Well, am I mistaken?
I think so.
Okay.
You have to forget. People forget the core of that offense is always dangerous. When you have a Julio,
that's
you
a,
have
a
Matt
a
Ryan
changer.
At the quarterback. They don't have a quarterback problem. They don't have to go and get somebody that can take the top off of defense. They always have that every draft. So now they focused on the defense. One of your favorite players in the draft, Vic Beasley, they ended up getting him. Now they have a pass rusher. They have great linebackers, great young linebackers. William Moore is still on the back end. Yeah, I like what Atlanta did.
What about Jacksonville?
I feel bad for Dante Fowler.
Dante Fowler, listen.
He's a playmaker. He's going to get it done. He's definitely going to get it done on the NFL level.
I think it's perfect for him, though, for that area. Now, maybe not the team, but for that area because played at Florida, still stays in the state. It's going to be – for him, just as economically it's going to be, I feel like it's going to be good. He's one of these guys that talking to just a lot of people at the draft said that this kid was a pretty good kid. They liked him. Like, when they got a chance to sit down and meet with him.
Communications major.
Pretty good kid.
Wants to have a career.
Yeah.
As an analyst after football.
Like, solid.
Already knows that going into it. Has a plan.
And it was,
I love
it,
anybody that has a plan.
And guess what? It was a little bit of star power at the draft when he came out.
Oh, right? He had the red bottoms
the
on?
The red bottoms had
with the,
you
gold
know,
studs?
Yeah. I mean, just people were – he's electric.
I was shocked he had on Florida State colors as a Florida Gator.
I was too. Just
threw me off a little bit.
I was cool with it though.
You were?
Yeah, because I don't care about the Seminoles. I really don't.
Let it go, man.
Eddie Goldman, we're gonna have to talk a little bit, man.
Eddie Goldman, I like. He's a playmaker. It's one thing I like about what Ryan Pace did. He got playmakers.
He did.
People that make plays at clutch times in a specific game. He brought that up about Kevin White. He brought it up about Eddie Goldman.
Yeah, and I think you get guys that when you have to be able to put the tape on,
yeah,
and you look at the tape, you go, man, these guys are difference makers. These are guys that are going to be here for a long period of time to help our franchise win a championship or get us to a championship. I think that's all you're really going for. You don't really know how guys are going to pan out. We can look here and give grades and give thumbs up and give thumbs down, but until they actually start playing the games, we have no clue. And I think it takes, like Ryan Pace said, it takes at least 2 years to kind of 2 or 3 years to see how a draft actually pans out.
A team that actually did well, in my opinion, but based upon the picture that their number one pick took with their general manager, I don't think he was too happy. That's Amari Cooper. I don't think he was happy at all.
I just really think that's
about
him.
Being drafted by the Oakland Raiders.
It took him smiling a little bit even at the Heisman ceremony event that he just didn't seem happy. But I think that's just him. He's one of these guys that is a
that's playmate. That Miami thing?
Yeah, it's the Miami thing.
Okay.
It's got a little bit of swagger to him. He's basically what we're about to talk about
walks
in third
softly,
down.
Carry a big stick.
Yeah, when we talk about what we're about to talk about in third down.
Yeah.
That's what he is.
Biggest losers. My guys. I don't know. You know, maybe I put the IDK on them.
But the boys?
Yeah.
Because
of Randy Gregory pick.
Hey, you can't be mad at him. You look at an organization that might be set up just to maybe help him move forward and to better himself as the NFL player. I think the Cowboys have the resources to be able to do that. Now, does he accept them? Does he come in and say, listen, I know now I need a little bit more help here? You know, now, guys, man, you talked about the millions of dollars, just the money that you make now. Your head gets pumped up a little bit more. Nobody can tell you anything. Well, the Cowboys took a chance on him. All the resources that are there that are available to him, he better use them, because don't mess up this opportunity.
Minnesota had a very sneaky, successful draft.
Yes, they did.
Green Bay, the Hundley pick.
Yeah, people.
Maybe he develops, maybe he doesn't. The Lions, they didn't reach to replace Sue.
No,
they got Nada in free agency. Yeah.
So I don't think you had to, though.
Yeah.
I don't think you had to. Losers. A lot of people, in my opinion, I don't know how I felt about Cleveland Browns.
I don't know. I like Cam Irving. And we talked about this. Anybody that can go from tackle to center and solidify an entire offensive line and keep Jameis Winston under control and how important he was to that offense and the running game, it's nothing like having a true leader and a dog at that center position.
Oh, that's true.
So I can't get mad. A second first-round pick? It wasn't like he was the first-round pick. He was the second one.
What about Tampa? You talked about Jameis Winston. What about Tampa?
Man, you know how I feel about Jameis Winston.
No, not about him as a whole. I'm talking about Tampa's whole Tampa's draft.
You get a quarterback like that, you win.
You win.
You win.
I don't know how people could have him in the losers.
You win.
Well, it's all good.
When you get a quarterback, you win.
A franchise quarterback,
yes.
You win. That's a must. Teams aren't
talent wise. Is he a franchise quarterback? See this? I don't get into all the other stuff.
Yeah, he is. What do
Thank
you.
That's
you.
Easy. That's it. When you get a franchise quarterback, talent wise,
can he? Can he stay? Can he stay focused? Like, I think that's going to be his key, and that's going to be his biggest battle. That's all he's got to do.
I know.
Listen, everything is there for you.
Don't take a hookup in Tampa for at least 2 years, Jameis. Stay away from hookups.
He doesn't need the hookups anymore.
Please stay away from hookups.
He doesn't need the hookups anymore. He can buy things on his own. There's
yeah,
no
but
hookups.
Even, you know, you get more hookups when you get money than you do when you don't have money.
Yeah, but now it's not about against NCAA rules. He's not dealing with the NCAA anymore.
That's true. The duffel bags are all legal now.
Yeah, the duffel bags are all legal. Whatever he wants to do. Just make sure your taxes are straight.
Hashtag legal duffel bag.
Make sure your taxes are straight.
Third down.
Now, this story broke this morning according to an ESPN reporter named Mike Rodak. He spoke with LeSean McCoy, who was traded from the Philadelphia Eagles to the Buffalo Bills. And according to LeSean McCoy, he said the relationship was never really great when he was speaking about Chip Kelly. I feel like I always respected him as a coach. I think that's the way he runs his team. He wants the full control. You see how fast he got rid of all the good players, especially all the good black players. He got rid of them the fastest. That's the truth. There's a reason. It's hard to explain with him, but there's a reason he got rid of all the black players, parentheses, the good ones, like that. We talked about this briefly when Stephen A. Smith made light of it. Look, we're going to take the covers off of this right now. This has nothing to do with race or color. That's for everybody that's listening to this and everybody that's thinking about this situation. Take racism out of it. This is more so about culture. We can go back to Oregon and Chip Kelly. He has never wanted or had dominant personalities on his team. He wants his personality to be the dominant personality. Now, can you take that as he has a problem with people or players with flash that have influence in a locker room? Fine, but there's one thing that he's going to find out in the NFL and one thing he found out in college since he never won a championship. What is it, Pete? You can tell him.
You need alpha males in your locker room, on your roster to win championships.
AKA,
we call them dogs.
Dogs.
You need dogs.
If you don't have a dog in that locker room, you're not going to win. LeSean McCoy, dog. DeSean Jackson, dog.
Going back a little bit before you started, I don't see it as a race issue.
It's not a race issue.
Some people now are going to bring it up just because of what LeSean McCoy said. But when you talked about culture in the locker room, I believe that has it's a big deal to some coaches, and some coaches it's not. There's some coaches that can handle all types of different backgrounds and different
I'm
players.
I'm glad you went there. Phil Jackson, what was his strength? Being able to handle egos.
He could
the
handle
culture.
Egos.
What was Jimmy Johnson's strength?
He could handle
handling egos. Culture.
But
he
had,
you can't be a great coach, Chuck Daly. Handle egos, handle culture.
But all these guys you're talking about won championships.
That's why Chip Kelly is a bomb waiting to explode in Philly because he won't win a championship wanting to be the biggest ego and the biggest dog in that franchise.
But I'll even go further with you on this. He is not going to win just by with his system.
No. He didn't do it in college.
So he's thinking that his system is bigger than anything else. And there's a reason, man. There's a reason why people talk about the University of Miami not winning like we used to win back in the day.
Preach.
All right?
Tell it.
When things changed a little bit, when you look at the coaches that won championships after you, there was a certain type of player that they were bringing in. I'm not talking about a thug. I'm not talking about, you know, criminal. I'm not talking about that. But when it came to the football field,
dogs,
alpha males who wanted to win and who were not going to give up anything unless they were winning the championship. Now, things changed a little bit. Donna Shalala had to change things around there a little bit, saying
that's because when the football program brings in all the money, and you start to raise the level of the academic excellence of the school, then all of a sudden you start to feel like you don't need the football program.
When you actually do need the football program. And I don't think that you just need to bring people in that have bad grades. But I'm just telling you guys, you told me to take the covers off. You want to win championships, you got to do whatever you got to do to be able to win. And that sometimes means we've seen it before. We've seen it all through college football. It's what's happening. A guy that I know that can manage different backgrounds, different, you know, Nick Saban at Alabama. Why is he winning all the championships? Huh? Be real here. I'm being honest. I'm not saying you need to push somebody and pass them on through the system. I'm not saying that. Not just saying to push them and pass them on through college. I'm saying once you get them there, guess what? Not only, they're student athletes. So on the student part, you got to do whatever you can to give them the resources to help them get better and to learn. Because guess what? As they become better and smarter people in the classroom, they become smarter players on the football field. I'll tell you that. If your grades are messed up while you're in school, more than likely things are going to happen on the football field that you're messing up on. Coaches, it's inevitable. It happens.
Yeah.
So
there's a reason the head coach of the 2015 national champion Ohio State Buckeyes, along with the brand new coach in Ann Arbor, are upsetting everybody in the SEC because they're running satellite camps in Florida and Texas. There's a reason they're going there. They're not running satellite camps in the Midwest.
No.
They're running them in Texas and Florida for a reason. You know why? That's where most of the dogs live.
Amari Cooper.
That's where you get Miami. Dog, that's where you go get them. That's how you win in a program. You go get those type of players.
Got to figure
Chip
it
Kelly,
out.
Chip Kelly, he wants to get rid of those type of players.
But Chip.
And this is the
listen,
kicker.
Chip
this
Kelly
is the kicker.
Hasn't won anything.
This is the trickster. Because this is where most people would try to bring up the racism. Okay? We know what happened. We know Riley Cooper, what he said. It's a problem because immediately as an organization, every African-American in the city of Philadelphia wanted him gone.
Wanted him gone.
And when you kept him and trotted out Michael Vick to make it all good, they're trying to talk them off the ledge. It didn't work because they saw right through it.
Yeah.
And then you have the calendar thing pop back up. You offend the community again. And once again, you try to sweep it under the rug by blaming the NFL or whoever produced the calendar. It's not working. It's not working. So that's where the racism comes from. The inability of that franchise to tend to the hurts of that particular section of their fan base. They basically just overlooked it. Chip Kelly's overlooked it. Michael Vick, I need you to go out here and make this better for me. And then I'm going to cut you.
Yeah.
Look.
Let me tell you. Let me just tell you this. Think you're smarter and bigger than the system?
You can't win without it. I don't care what sport it is.
You can't win without
the Bulls.
Dogs.
The Bulls are relevant because of that dog that grew up here in the south side of Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
He's a dog. The summer after his rookie year, who comes out and says, I can be the best player in the NBA and then goes and does it? He's a dog. Jimmy Butler, he's improved. He's not a dog.
No.
He's not a dog.
But the fact is that right now, when you look at Joaquim is still playing a little hurt
Joaquim
right now.
He's a dog.
He's a dog, but he's
playing. He was a dog at Florida.
Yeah, but now you have, listen, now you have Jimmy that's surrounded by these guys who's learning what it means. Because one thing that we've always talked about is Derek's not afraid
of anything.
You
can talk about what he said.
You can talk about the injuries.
You can talk about the injuries. You can be upset about all of that.
He's from Chicago.
At the end of the day, put him anywhere, he walks in thinking, I can win.
That's the one thing about that you brought this up about college basketball. When you watch college basketball and somebody's at the free throw line and you see their name says where they're from.
Yeah.
When it says Chicago, you know they're putting
certain
in
mentality.
Work. There's a certain mentality. Yeah, a little bit different. We're not running satellite camps up in the Midwest.
No.
For what? 3 stars. We're going down south.
Yes, sir.
That's where we're going to find them. You want to win in the NFL, you want to win in sports, you better have dogs on your roster. If not, you're just going to be average.
Yeah, so Chip Kelly, I don't know what you're doing. Has nothing to do with racism. You're just not smart.
No, it's not that. Listen, it's a culture issue. That's what it is. He wants a different culture in his locker room. It's not going to win you a championship.
He can have that and win 9-10 games every year and end up back in college in 3 years.
Yeah, he'll find his way back to college.
And still won't win in college.
Fourth and goal.
All right, time to jump over to Powell. Fourth and goal down in distance right here, WGN Plus. I'd like to welcome in Joel Corey. He's a former sports agent, does NFL contracts and salary cap expert and writer. You can catch all of his talk writings on Football Post and CBS Sports. Joel, welcome into Down in Distance. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you guys doing today?
Man, we're doing well.
Well, man.
A lot of money was being made last Thursday, Friday, and Saturday here in Chicago at the NFL draft. How long does it take for these contracts, especially in the first and second round, on average, to get signed?
You used to see a lot of first-round picks not getting signed until training camp was starting, or holdouts. That was before the 2011 collective bargaining agreement created a rookie wage scale. Honestly, if the players were educated a little bit on how the system worked, they could do their own deal, because it's pretty much a very narrow parameter of what a guy is going to get with each particular pick. Chicago typically does their deals early. Cliff Stein usually is the first person, that's the Bears negotiator, that has all his draft picks done. So I expect Cliff to have everything done for the Bears, and including Kevin White, probably by May 20th at the latest.
Wow. So you're talking that right there. You threw something at me that I didn't know, Joel. Is that these guys now, where it's slated, they could actually just do it there by themselves now. That's pretty interesting. Come from a guy who came in out in 2004 and was just trying to make it and try to figure out, man, how much money can I get as a free agent, and trying to figure that out. But you look at guys that come and make all the money that they made here in Chicago, all these rookies coming in. And Sean and I talked about this. When I was at the University of Miami, I had an opportunity to play with a guy named Philip Buchanan. And just recently, he came out with a new book called New Money, Staying Rich. And just talked about in the book how, you know, once he got to the NFL, his mom basically said, you owe me $1 million. And it's funny now we talk about these guys and financial advisors, and I've had a lot of guys who I played with that went on to make a lot of money, but also lose a lot of money. How do these guys in the long term be able to save money so that they can live forever on what they made playing football?
I've always said it's not what you make, it's what you keep. And the weird thing about the industry that's happened over the last 10, 15 years, You have financial advisors that recruit athletes just as hard, if not harder, than agents. And I never understood why a player would need a financial advisor before he's drafted, because you never know what's going to happen. You could do something self-inflicted like Randy Gregory, and you could drop in the draft and not go where you expected. So you're not going to be making the same type of money. Or if something happens like with Lyle Collins, where he could be just the victim of poor circumstances, you're making maybe $8 million less than you would have made if everything had gone the way it was supposed to. I think one thing that some people don't realize is that players, when they come in, they've never had any experience with money at all. So one thing that struck me a little surprisingly at first was I had to teach some guys, how to write a check.
Wow.
Which is something I just took for granted. But if you've never had the need for a checking account, why would you know how to write a check? But I think hit on something with the parental aspect, that it may be a natural inclination for some guys to want to take care of their parents and some family members. But I think there need to be some limits. Maybe if you are drafted high enough, house, car, that's it. You don't have the whole thing, which happened with Philip Buchanan, because I read some of the excerpts from his book. I was a little surprised that his mind was renting out the old house and making a profit off of that. So I think you kind of have to draw the line with your family members, as hard as that may be.
As an agent, what part did you play in trying to help a player coming into the league navigate those issues between family members and friends from his past?
Well, I try to play the bad guy. I would tell them that you make me the scapegoat. You say you have a budget, that everything has to run through me. You have them call me. And let me say no. It's not in his budget. He can't afford to do that. And then you have the friends who want to be set up in business. And my first thing I would do to eliminate almost all of the business inquiries from friends trying to play business is, okay, that's great, your idea. Send me your business plan. I never got a business plan most of the time. And when I did get a business plan, it was worthless. So that would eliminate a lot of that stuff. The thing is getting the player to feel comfortable enough to pass the buck to either the agent or the financial advisor to be the person to say no.
Wow. Well, a lot of studies show that, I've seen a couple that say about 7 out of 10 professional athletes go broke after they're done playing. And you talked about just kind of being that scapegoat. A lot of guys, we as athletes, we always see ourselves as setting goals when we're playing, whether it's to, you know, rush for 1,000 yards or try to be this, you know, win the scoring title. But I don't think athletes as much have the same goal setting when it comes to life after football. Did you ever have to kind of push guys to go, man, listen, I know you're playing and you're looking into your playbook, but you also got to start looking to the future about what your goals are going to be after playing sports?
Yes, that was something I would try to do early on with a player in his career. And there's a fine line between trying to get them to think about a second career and the rest of their life early on and not having them think, you know, you don't have confidence in them having a long career. Odds are you have a 3-year career. You may not get a second contract. So I think it's smart for a player to start identifying something he may or may not want to do. And sometimes if there's an off-season internship and say someone thought they were interested in the financial world and wanted to have an internship with a broker, maybe he finds out, I know this is what I don't want to do. That's valuable in and of itself. If you can narrow down options and you automatically eliminate what you thought was an interest and know that it's not an interest. Natural progressions are to go into coaching or broadcasting, but if you're going to go into either one of those two areas, particularly broadcasting, you hone your skills while you're playing, particularly if you're not a household name or someone who's got some star power. If you're more of your average player, you're going to have to be better than, say, the Emmitt Smiths of the world, because they're going to get first opportunity, have an opportunity, chance to fail, even if they aren't very good. A guy I think players should try to emulate if they want to go down that road is Ryan Clark, who towards the tail end of his career started having appearances on ESPN, and that's led him being hired full-time. Because one thing you can do locally is you can find a station that's willing to have you get a regular feature on the Sunday sports wrap-up show. You can start getting reps and honing your skills on a local basis where you can make your mistakes for a smaller audience, get more comfortable, and as your career progresses, this is what you want to do. You're going to have some experience.
Joel, that's funny you say that, because a lot of these guys in the NFL, and I was one of them, who didn't know about all the things that the NFL kind of has out there for you, like the broadcast boot camp, where you can go and kind of figure out and be in front of some of these big execs from these big companies, and also get a chance to talk to radio execs. I didn't know that that stuff was actually available until after I was done playing football.
Yeah, that's something that over the last maybe 10, 12 years, they've started the programs like the broadcast boot camp, the programs of Harvard, Wharton, and in Stanford for continuing education in certain areas, sometimes entrepreneurship, and other areas are like the financial world, so you can get a continuing education and gain more knowledge in those areas. Those are things that we always encourage our players to take advantage of in the offseason. One thing that I always stress that you don't do as an athlete is do not invest your own money in a restaurant, because most restaurants fail. And do not get into the record industry, because that's a money pit for the most part.
You're listening to Down the Distance. Sean Davis, Jared Payton on the phone with us. Joel Corey, former sports agent, NFL contract and salary cap expert. And Joel, you just mentioned something very important, but going back to one of your statements earlier in our conversation, we're starting to see a trend in sports at large. I think Floyd Mayweather is a great example, and we've seen some guys in the NFL take accountability for their own brand and negotiate their own contracts. Do you see this moving forward and becoming more than a trend and becoming more evident, especially going into the draft, where some of these guys coming out of college would take accountability for their own brand, take full control of their own brand straight out of college and going into the NFL?
The only thing I think keeping guys from doing that coming out of the draft is that it's now become customary for agents to foot the bill for all pre-draft training expenses. When I first got in the industry maybe 20 years ago, you didn't have places like Exos or like Michael Johnson facility in Texas that would train guys from the combine. They worked out at the school with the strength coach and the track coach, and that was combine training, and guys did well that way. Now it's anywhere from a $15,000 to $30,000 expense in training, and then you're going to have to give them some sort of allowance during the pre-draft portion as well. So you may not make money on a draft pick from an agent standpoint until year two if he doesn't go in the first couple of rounds. I think that's the one thing that probably will keep players from going on their own before the draft, because agents can add value in terms of before the draft. Because look at Shane Rain's situation. If he tried to navigate that on his own,
right,
he didn't have agents behind him that had some experience or competent in terms of what he should do to try to limit the damage that was done from his citation for marijuana, then who knows what happens with him draft-wise. So, yeah, I think you may be a little short-sighted from a player standpoint looking at, and I can save the commission, whether it's 3%, 2% on my rookie deal, by not having an agent. From that standpoint, yes, pure negotiation standpoint, you don't need the agent, but hopefully your agent adds more value than just negotiating the contract.
All right, Joel, before you go, we always talk about parenting on fourth down and financial planning, especially with athletes or just children at large. At what age would you suggest to our listeners to start talking to their kids about financial planning?
Well, just going back to my own experience, I remember when I was in high school, that's when my parents started introducing me to concepts more so about money. Because when you're a little kid, you're not that aware of what things cost. Maybe if you come from an extremely impoverished background, you don't have anything, you're aware of the fact that your situation is kind of dire. But if you come from a background where you're kind of oblivious to what things cost, and financially, high school maybe is a good time to start generally introducing kids to the concept of money, how a checking account works, writing the checks, and stuff like that.
Do you think they would ever implement any type of business curriculum at the smaller levels, possibly Pop Warner leagues or anything like that?
Yeah,
I mean, the NFL is so involved now,
even at those levels.
Especially with the kids that come from impoverished situations like Joel talked about. Kids get to a certain age, they get drafted, they've never written a check. That's a simple thing that you can give an opportunity to a kid to be able to open a bank account at the age of 7 or 8 to say, at least you have $5 in a bank account and you know how to write a check, you know how to look at a bank statement.
I think it's a great idea.
Yeah. What do you think about that, Joel?
No, I like that idea, but I think at the very least, there's no excuse for a player to come in and not have no awareness or be completely financially illiterate.
Yeah.
That's something you could do for freshmen at college, particularly if you think that they have pro potential. You make that mandatory for those kids. That should be a class that they take, where they learn about these concepts there at the very least. I think you can put the onus on the universities to do that for the student athletes, particularly since some are just there to turn pro and look at it as just a stepping stone to a future career, and aren't really taking advantage of the educational opportunities. That's something I think at the very minimum that colleges could do for these prospects for professional sports.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, that's Joel Corey. You can follow him right now on Twitter at Corey, CORRYJOEL. You can also follow him on Football Post and CBS Sports. Joel, thanks for joining Down in Distance.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you guys for tuning in to this week's episode of Down in Distance. Shouts out to our man, Joel Corey, for coming on with us to talk about salary cap, a lot of money issues, and how parents can kind of push their kids into knowing a little bit more about getting themselves ready to be financially stable. Sean M. Davis, one on Twitter. I'm at Peyton Sun on Twitter. As always, we'll be here next week. Check everything out on WGNplus.com. We were here. Now we gone. Peace.